El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
And it's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch. Funny is her sister. Welcome to the show.
Your mom.
All right. So anyway, welcome to our program. We're here every night, Monday through Friday, as I mentioned, till 1 on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. And we're at philhendryshow.com with live streaming video of the show. You can watch a video cast, Phil TV in HD, thousands of hours of downloadable shows going back over a decade, thousands of hours of just about everything. We have video there as well. We've got TV pilots that we did that were not accepted by the network because they were substandard. They sucked. And however, we'd like you to watch them anyway. Well, you know, they're pretty good. It's all there at philhendryshow.com. Well, on and I wanted to share this with you guys. By the way, later on tonight, we're going to give away a couple of shot glasses, the Phil Hendry Show official shot glass, which, for those of you who are watching the video cast, you can go over and take a look at our shot glass in our souvenir shop. But it is summertime, and we have to get people ready for the, you know, the margarita party, so we're going to give those away later on in the program. This past Saturday was a very significant day for myself and for very close friends of mine. And I want to just mention a little bit of this to you because it was, I was just talking to Dan about it and to Bud and Robert. My very dear friend Paul Compton died in 2007. He took his own life. And it was, you can imagine, not only a shock for myself and friends of his, but his family, his wife and two children were devastated. So ever since that very sad day, his friends have gathered, myself, one of them, and I'm very fortunate to count myself among Paul's friends. We gather for the odd celebration of his life, and there were a lot of things that Paul liked. He loved basketball, loved the Lakers. He loved playing basketball, and he loved coaching it. He coached basketball and baseball for his kids and other kids. And he loved a good card game. And I can still remember hearing his voice. It's kind of weird to know you'll never hear someone, you know, you'll never hear somebody's voice again. But I can still remember him calling me up and saying, "Hey, Phil, we got a card game. Do you want to play?" So on Saturday, we had our Paul Compton Memorial Poker Tournament, the details of which are on our homepage if you want to go take a look. You don't need a subscription to look at the. We've got a very nice story written there by Doug Baldwin. Entitled Compton Moon. As you know, there was a super moon this weekend. So it was all sort of very synchronistic as we sat there and we were out on the patio at DJ's house there and everybody was smoking cigars and it was kind of nice because you don't want to smoke inside the house and meanwhile there's this big moon and we're playing in honor of Paul. And Joe, Don's son, won the tournament. It was a Texas Hold'em. If you've watched any of the poker tournaments on television, you probably have some familiarity with the format. And we played that format, although, as I mentioned to you guys on Saturday, you know, I grew up playing all different kinds of poker. But nonetheless, we had a winner-take. We actually didn't have a winner-take-all, but we had first and second place. And first place won a few, you know, like, I don't know, a bunch of money. And second place won a second larger bunch of money. And the winner was Don's son, Joe, who was also coached by Paul. It was funny because he said to me, I said to Joe, who's maybe 21, 22 years old, you know, make sure, man, that you have that trophy in your apartment in a prominent place so I may come over or any of us may want to come over and hang out and drink a beer, and I want to see that trophy. He goes, don't worry. He says, I'm going to put this because he said, you know, my grandparents died before I was born. He says, I really didn't have a chance to know my grandparents. My grandmother was very, very sick. He said, but besides my uncles and my father, he said, I knew Paul. He coached me in basketball. He coached me in baseball. He coached, you know, Adam, his own son, and Lindsay, his daughter. And he says, I knew him. He was a big factor in my life as a kid. He says, so don't worry. You're going to see that trophy when you come visit. And we also watched the Derby. Congratulations to I'll Have Another. And this young jockey out of nowhere. And just for a moment, indulge me, folks, because I come from Arcadia, California. And that doesn't mean a whole hell of a lot to anybody, really, even people from Arcadia. But there are a couple things that those of us who come from Arcadia, California, share in. And one of them is that big plant that sits in the middle of our town called Santa Anita Racetrack. And if you grew up in Arcadia, you could not avoid riding your bike by it, driving your car by it. In fact, I learned how to drive in the parking lot of Santa Anita Racetrack, as did a lot of kids in Arcadia, California. During the off season, it's one big, fat, empty space, and dads and moms take the kids over there and teach them how to drive. So horse racing was a very big part of my life. I mean, even if you didn't like horse racing, you couldn't help but hear the PA announcer from Santa Anita on a Saturday, especially during the stakes races, calling out the horses as they were coming down the stretch and listening to the roar of, you know, of the crowd. So we did gather to watch the Kentucky Derby. And we have who on the line?
David on.
David G. Hall joining us, who's the Vice President of Syndication tonight. David, how are you doing?
Philip, I'm doing very well, and I want to thank you for bringing up, and I know it's got to hurt, bringing up the poker tournament that you and your friends played in honor of your friend Paul. And I just found you talking about it very compelling, and I found it to be a very interesting story, a human story, a story of friendship, and certainly, Phil, a story of the greatest drama in life, and that is life itself and death. Life and death are the dramatic turns, you know, and I want to thank you for...
Well, you know, you got to share these things with people.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's what talk radio is about. You know, talk radio to me is bringing to the radio some things that are... You try to be as compelling as you can.
Well, I agree with you. And we were listening, and I know that Bud told me that you had a couple of things you're going to do in the hour.
Well, yeah, we got... I did have a guest lined up. Dr. Sadler was lined up to talk about kids abusing painkillers.
Right, and I did talk to Dr. Sadler, and he is... on the other line right now, Bud?
Yeah,
he's on... Dr. Sadler and I were discussing, continuing with you talking about your friend Paul and getting into some of the specifics. I know that you say he committed suicide.
That's correct.
And I think it would be very... I think it would be very helpful to a lot of people listening tonight, Phil, and I think it would be interesting... to hear more about that.
Yeah, it's the only problem is it's a little, it's, how do I say this? A little painful.
Right. No, I understand it. And these are the things that we as performers and as broadcasters, we got to work through a lot of this, you know. So I would hope that you can do that, because I think you've got a good hour here with talking about Paul. Get into, I think the audience would like to know how it is he died.
It's very painful for me to talk about. I don't particularly want to.
I understand. But sometimes we got to do what we don't want to do. And you have, you got an opportunity here, Phil. What I want you to do is I want to frame this in terms of an opportunity.
Okay, I mean...
Frame it in terms of an opportunity to talk about something very compelling and very, very... I gotta say, very interesting, compelling, and emotional. The other thing that I think is you need to realize, females, the female listener is a very transient listener when it comes to talk radio. Women do listen to talk radio, but not as... they are not as devoted and committed to talk radio as men. And I think the reason for that is because there isn't really enough of the human. When we talk about the human element, the human topics, you know. And so I want you to talk about this because it's going to get women listening.
I understand, David, and any other topic I'd be happy to. I worry, though, that this is, it's a little exploitive of this man.
Well, were you just at a poker tournament for him?
Yes, I was.
And were you just talking about it?
Of course I was.
All right, then why not continue? And we'll bring in Dr. Sadler, and he can... You say it's painful. I understand. But let's work through this.
Well, I mean, I appreciate you wanting to help me. I'm fine.
Well, yes, I do want to help you, but understand it's also the... This is a far more interesting topic than anything you could do. There's real... This is a good topic because it's about suicide and it's death. And when you come back, you need to get into how he died.
No, I don't want to do that, okay? I don't want to do that, David. I'm not going to get into how... I don't feel comfortable doing that.
Well, there's no point in coming on the air then and telling people what happened without saying how. Why did you tell people what happened?
I wanted to let people in on a little bit of a celebration that we were having for him.
Yeah, but you went ahead and you told everybody what happened. Now they want to know how. Okay?
Well, it may be.
But that's too bad for them? Jesus. Yeah.
No, it's not too bad for them. I just don't really feel like talking about this. Okay?
You don't feel like talking about it, but it's very interesting, especially if you will get into how the guy died. I know he's your friend. I don't want to disrespect him. But I also see an opportunity to drive listeners to your show. You understand what I'm saying?
I have to take a break here. We can talk about it during the break, okay?
All right, we'll talk about it during the break.
Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445.
Hey, but here's an idea. People could call if they think it's a good idea or if they think it's a bad idea. They call and talk to you. And I really don't want to hear from people who think it's a bad idea because it's a good idea, but maybe they have ideas on how to do it.
No, I don't think that's a good idea either, you know.
You're just saying no.
Pretty much, yeah.
No, we got to talk about it.
All right, 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Hendry Show here with David G. Hall and more, and Jim Sadler, I think, is online, but okay. Dr. Jim Sadler will be up here in a moment with us. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. Phil Hendry Show.
All right, hold on for a minute. David G. Hall is with us, and we're going to get Dr. Jim Sadler in here for a moment, and we're talking about the passing, not just the passing of my friend Paul. You know, it's been almost five years. You understand that, right?
I know that, but you had this poker tournament.
Right. The poker tournament was in memorial to him, and it was something that we did as a way of honoring his life.
No, people, the people that listen to talk radio, let's face it, Phil, you know, we want to have details. I understand he was a friend of yours, but you're not getting into how the man died. Now, I know what you're saying. I know you're saying that, you know, you want to protect his, you want to protect his family, you want to protect him.
Yeah, absolutely I do.
And I understand that. Talk radio right now, I don't know if you know this or not, but the internet is cutting into not only television, it's cutting into radio. You know, and talk radio is, we're losing share. We're losing market share, and we need something here.
Well, I'm not losing any market share. Maybe the rest of the format is.
Well, okay, but what I'm asking is, can you give us some detail on how he committed suicide?
Why?
Because it's going to draw people, if the listeners... Women especially like talking about intrapersonal issues. And when you talk about a man who committed suicide, you're talking about something that women are going to be interested in because of the interpersonal.
I understand that, and I understand that it has more to do with the heart than the head. Men are up in the head, women are in the heart. I get it. All right, I understand that.
Then why are you not, but you have to, if you talk about a man committing suicide, you've got to give some detail, because women are going to, not only do they want to talk about what's happening in the heart, but they also need to have some of that detail. It gives, I don't know why.
Well, it's not going to happen, I'm not going to do it, so forget it, okay?
God, what an ass.
If you got Dr. Sadler there?
What?
If you've got Dr. Sadler there?
Yeah, we do. But I want Dr. Sadler up on the other line here so we can get.
Hey, Jim, are you there?
Hi, Phil. Yeah.
Okay. Are you listening to this?
Hold on. I want to say something. Dr. Sadler, it's David G. Hall.
David, how are you?
Yeah, I'm fine, but I'm arguing with Phil here about this friend of his who committed suicide. They had a memorial poker tournament for him.
Right.
And Phil did a very nice job at the beginning of the show talking about his friend, talking about how he had, committed suicide. Now, as you know, Dr. Sadler, that's a very compelling issue.
Let me say something to Phil. Are you there?
I'm right here.
All right. What you did, and I think what David is trying to say, is that you gave them the entree and you're not delivering entree. You gave them the hors d'oeuvre or the cracker, but you're not giving them the dinner. When you say that a friend of yours, committed suicide and that you are having a poker tournament for him, you're talking about love and friendship, and that's something people really want to hear more about, and as David said, especially women. When you don't follow up with detail on, how he committed suicide, you're not feeding the soul of your primary listener, which is the female or people who are interested.
But I don't give detail.
Hold on, let me just finish here.
No, you're not giving the details.
Hold on, let me finish.
I'm just talking about the details that he didn't get.
Let me finish. Let me talk to Phil.
Can't you?
Let me finish. Let me talk.
Let Dr. Sadler talk.
Yeah, I know, but he's not saying anything.
I'm sorry?
You're not saying anything.
Excuse me, David. I think I am. I'm saying, believe me, I know what I'm talking about. I'm a doctor. I'm a doctor of psychiatry.
No, you're not.
I'm a doctor of psychology, all right?
Well,
excuse me? Who is this ass?
It's David G. Hall. He's the program director.
Boy, that really irks me. You don't think I'm a doctor of psychology?
I don't know. I mean, there's not a lot of these doctors.
Can we talk about that later? You guys have taken up valuable time on my show to talk about this.
You know, this guy is I'm just saying, if
this guy, are you talking to me, right? This guy?
Yes, I'm talking to you. Dr. Sadler, all I want to know is, why won't Phil Henry get into some of the details of how his friend committed suicide? I know it's painful for him.
I think we need to acknowledge that. And I think that's what Phil is missing here. If I acknowledge to you, Phil, that it's painful for you, would that free you? Would that free you to feel more comfortable with me as your friend to tell me about the details of the suicide?
No, it wouldn't.
It wouldn't. And why is that? Is there something that you're walking away?
It's not appropriate to share on the air. I don't care what anybody says. I've let out enough as to the specifics of his death and the reason why we had the poker tournament.
No, but you're not listening to me. I'm giving you permission now because I'm saying that I acknowledge the pain.
Yeah, he's acknowledging your pain and giving you permission to go ahead and say it.
If you don't mind, Mr. Hall, I can do it. Okay, Phil?
Yeah, I know, but I don't really need permission.
I think you do, because that's what I'm hearing.
No, I really don't need permission, because, Dr. Sadler, I'm not comfortable talking to you about these things, let alone my audience, because...
Why don't you, Phil? Tell me about that. Why don't you?
Because you sound very... it's uncomfortable for me to talk to you.
What does that mean?
What are you talking about?
Well, you have the, obviously...
You talking about my speech impediment?
No, it isn't the speech impediment.
Yes, it is. It's a speech impediment.
What are you talking about, Phil?
No, it's not a speech impediment. He has a rather...
it's not my speech impediment. What is it?
It's a very... you're very effeminate in the way that you talk.
Oh, man. You say to me?
You're very effeminate in the way that you talk. It's difficult for me to feel comfortable
Okay, so, in other words, I came on your program.
Hold on for a minute, okay?
Oh, so you're going to put me on...
Hold, yes, I have to. 877-876-7445. Why aren't I talking about the specifics of my friend's death, the friend that we honored this past weekend? Because I don't feel comfortable. And David G. Hall would like me to, because it would mean a lot for the ratings. Isn't that... And I don't mind doing things for ratings. I don't mind doing disgusting things for ratings. But not this. Not this. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
877-876-PHIL.
Videocast, and when you do that, it makes me feel uncomfortable.
All right, David G. Hall and Dr. Jim Sadler have joined us here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show as we continue to talk this evening. I did not anticipate this. I don't mind, but it feels as if I'm being pressured into this, David.
I'm trying to tell you, Phil, that we've got an opportunity here to gain audience at a time when the spoken word format, talk radio, is really suffering. Now, you know, the Obama this and Obama that and Obama something else, and now you come along with a friend of yours that committed suicide and you don't want to give the detail. I understand how you feel. I understand. Now, you just said to Dr. Sadler something that I think has upset him, and that is that you're not comfortable talking to him because he sounds effeminate.
I will tell you, Phil, I've done an awful lot of work on suicide prevention, suicide hotlines, and I've heard a lot of tales, but I've never, ever had anyone that I was trying to help call me what you called me.
I didn't call you anything, sir.
You most certainly did. You said that I sounded effeminate.
You asked me why I'm not being candid with you.
You could have been candid with him for the sake of the radio show. For the sake of the show, you could have been candid. But you want to instead go. Here's the honest route you want to go. Instead of telling us the details of your friend's death, which I understand is hurtful, but it would have been less hurtful because your friend is... You know, is a dead guy, and Dr. Sadler is living. So you said to Dr. Sadler, he's effeminate. Well, your friend, you don't want to offend, and he's not.
You use the word. We'll use a colloquial, and it's ugly. But there's the term dirt nap, and yeah, dirt nap.
Dirt nap, huh? My friend, huh?
You called me effeminate.
I called you effeminate. You're still here.
That's exactly the point, Phil. That's exactly the point. You called a guy that's still here effeminate.
And you're talking about the memory of my friend, okay?
The memory? What are you talking about?
I don't like anybody being referred to that way, anyone who's passed on, particularly somebody who's a friend of mine. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Dustin. Go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show. Dustin.
Hey, Phil. How you doing?
Fine.
I lost my mom to the same thing, and you know, I just think it's incredible that you have these two people on here. You know, the doctor, I wouldn't feel comfortable talking to you either. It creeps me out to put it in that.
You're really opinionated for a guy. He's only been on a few minutes. Why do you have such negative opinions?
Well,
I doubt seriously if your mother committed suicide.
Why would you say that?
I don't know if I should say it on the air, but I can't believe you're even saying that right now. You know, and I can't believe you two right now. You know, you got
I
one
can't believe you saying, oh, you know, it just so happens, memory, Phil. It just so happens my mother killed herself,
away,
Phil.
And
whoa.
Bring out
hold on.
She passed away. I know,
right.
Hell, I wouldn't want to talk about my mom passing, how she passed away. You know, it's
sickening.
It's sick.
How did she die? How did your mother die? How did
I'm
your mother die?
You,
don't ask him that. He doesn't want to tell you that.
Why
I'm
not?
Not gonna get into, exactly. I'm not going to get into
see,
that.
Here's the thing. This is what I'm trying to say, Dustin. Phil Hendry has a radio show, and he has an obligation to make it compelling and interesting.
It doesn't mean that I trot out all the ghoulish aspects of my life so people can pick through it and see what's entertaining.
But, Phil, you know, you can call me a feminist if you want to. You can call me a feminist if you want to, both of you gentlemen. That's fine. That's not what my voice is not what it's about. My voice is not what it's about.
And a creep in my terms, if you guys want to... If you want to get down to it, I don't feel comfortable talking to you. I'll call you a doctor, but you sort of creep me out.
Well, you know, I haven't said one thing offensive other than the fact that my voice sounds funny, and you're offending me. I mean, okay, Dustin, I don't like the fact that your name's Dustin. It sounds gay.
Okay, so what's the point?
Well, hold on for a minute. Why, you know, yeah, it's got a fruit's name.
Even if I was gay, I mean, why would that matter?
You got the name of a fruit. Well, why does it matter if I have a voice that maybe make you
you're asking someone to open up to you, which
right,
exactly. You know,
You sound like a guy that in high school they wanted you to talk. How old were you when your mother died?
22.
Okay, Dustin. Your mother died 22. You were still in high school at 22? Wow.
He didn't say that.
No, I never said that. You asked how old
No, he did not. You said if he was in high school, he would talk to a counselor.
Oh, he said... Who said that he was in high school? I thought that's what he said.
No.
No, you asked something about high school, and then you asked how old I was, and I told you how old I was, and everyone said I was in high school.
Well, if your mother had committed suicide while you were in high school, they would have had you talk to a school counselor, okay?
Okay, this is what you're
not getting. Now, hold on for a minute. Let's say that when you talk to the school counselor to help you through a crisis, they happen to have a speech impediment. Are you going to go, I don't want to talk to them? No. You'll suffer through it to see if you can glean some truth.
Huh?
Well, because, you know, I have insurance.
Not really.
I can go see my own counselors.
How many have you got?
All right. Dustin, thank you, and thanks for sharing that about your mom. I appreciate that. 877-876-PHIL.
You know, what you didn't do there, Phil, you gave me the opportunity. I wanted to ask the young man. You know, if you're in pain... If you're in real pain, you're gonna talk to someone, regardless. And you calling me a feminist?
That was insensitive. And we still haven't gotten to the point of what, you know, how your friend died.
Let me tell both of you guys something, okay?
What?
When I was in high school, we had a counselor, and I don't want to say his name, but this guy was he. This is how he talked. Listen. Now, I'm not saying that he was gay. I'm just saying that this is how he talked. Mr. Hendry, what is the... Okay?
Oh, so you're being homophobic.
No, I'm not. I'm telling you, when I was a 15-year-old kid in high school, this was one of the guys that they would tell us to go and talk to for counseling. And it was... I couldn't do it.
Well, is that because you were homophobic?
I just got done saying, no, I was... Homophobic? You're 15 years old, and it's 1968... Homophobic, I wouldn't call myself. I would call myself an average kid at the age of 15 in 1968.
So it meant that any guy that sounded like that...
Or you, Dr. Sadler, to be perfectly honest with you.
All right, well, that may be true, but you haven't grown past it. Here it is, 2012, and you're still the same mentality of what you was in 1968. And to me, that's a red flag.
I'm sorry, what was it?
It's a red flag. It's a bag. No, I said. Oh, my God. It's a wet flag. Wet flam.
A wet flam.
Are both of you guys brain dead? I said red flag.
Oh, a red flag.
Yes.
I didn't understand what you were saying.
Oh, you know what? Both of you can go to... I got an idea for you, all right? If you read Dante's Inferno, he speaks of a 12th ring. A 12th ring.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yes, isn't that nice?
The 12th ring of hell?
Right. Why don't the two of you book passage immediately for the 12th ring?
And where do we go?
I'm sure, and I'll shut up.
Oh, God. We'll be right back. David G. Hall is... hold on for a minute. David, are you still there?
Hey, I'm here.
I book passage to the 12th ring.
I don't know, but I think what happened was is you blew him off the line because he was offended by how you described him sounding effeminate.
Well, I don't like opening up to some people if they sound weird. You know, and I didn't say he sounded effeminate. I just...
Yes, you did say that.
All right, I apologize. He sounded strange. I can't open up to a guy like that. And there's no way that you're going to get me to tell you about the suicide of my dear friend on the air for the kicks and the salacious interest, maybe not so much salacious as just the ghoulish interest of certain people in the audience.
So what you're doing is you're calling your audience ghoulish.
No, I'm certain people, I said. Certain people. I think that we've talked enough about it.
Well, I've got a couple of more people I want to talk to you. I don't know if you want to or not. We got Dr. Ron Turner. And some people really feel strongly about you getting this off your chest.
There's nothing on my chest, okay? There's nothing on my chest. Take, you know, hold on. 877-876-7445. You know, the biggest mistake I made this hour was even bringing it up. I was going to start with something else, but I mentioned our memorial poker tournament for my friend Paul, who died in 2007, and now I got a whole thing about it. Why don't you open up, Phil? All right, we'll be right back here. 877-876-7445. It is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Here, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. David G. Hall on the line with us, Dr. Ron Turner joining us. I haven't had so many people concerned about me.
Well, Phil, I'm not so much concerned about you. David wanted me to call and ask you about your friend, and I understand your friend passed on.
Well, my friend committed suicide a number of years ago, but we just had a memorial poker tournament for him.
Okay, and what was David? What?
I think that we need Phil to talk more specifically about. I thought you agreed with me.
You thought I agreed with you? I didn't even know what it was.
I'm sorry.
Hold on. I need to talk to you off the air about it.
You need to talk to me. All right, he's going to talk to me off the air, bud.
You didn't let Dr. Turner in on what we're talking about. No wonder he's going to be a little bit shy about it, okay?
I talked to him about it. He just suddenly got uncomfortable.
877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Let's go over to Casey. Casey, you're on the Phil Hendry Show here. Go ahead.
Well, your advisor who told you that women would be interested in your describing your personal feelings about it, deeply personal experience is wrong. This woman respects the fact that you have the integrity to fight for your rights to privacy of those feelings. I'm sick of people spilling all of their feelings all over the place, all of the time.
This is David G. Hall. I'm the advisor
no
you were speaking of, and you know as well as I do that women enjoy hearing things that are very private.
Well, I don't know what women you know, but I can tell you that as far as I and my friends are concerned, we exercise a great deal of discretion even in dealing with each other, much less publicly broadcasting our feelings.
Well, I don't mean... I understand that women are very private when it comes to certain, for instance, sexual things, but we're talking about suicide.
That's not the only thing you're private about. No.
We're talking about suicide and the details.
Yes, and this man is... And Phil is entitled to his feelings and to his privacy about those feelings. He doesn't have to spill his guts in front of the entire world.
I mean, because what we're talking about here, Casey, thank you for taking my side.
Can I just finish with the lady, Phil, because I know you want to talk to her.
Well, I'm thanking her for understanding.
Yeah, you're thanking her for understanding, but what you're doing is you're cutting your own throat, you see?
How am I cutting my own throat?
By not...
Well,
why did you find that funny? I'm curious. Why did you find that funny?
I've never called Phil before. So
no, I'm saying Phil's cutting his own throat because...
It was not his friend's suicide. It was your insistence on his exposing his private feelings. So there.
But women want to hear that. And
well, I don't know. As I said, I don't know what women you know, but
well, you know as well as I
know, and I know a lot of them.
Have you ever watched The View? Have you ever watched The View? There you go. I rest my case.
Yes, I watched The View.
I rest my case. Those women will talk about men committing suicide until the cows come home. They don't seem to have
I never heard them talk about anybody committing suicide, except Whitney Houston.
Well, I thought Barbara Walters, there you go, there's a great example. Barbara Walters got into the gruesome, gory details of what the coroner photographs looked like, and they all clucked away drinking their coffee.
That's the people on the view.
That's not the people watching them. That's not your everyday run-of-the-mill woman who lives a life, runs her house, runs her business, and tries not to run her mouth.
What about the women that wanted to know about how O.J. killed his wife?
Well, you know, you can talk about anything. I don't think that that's
O.J.
just women.
O.J. killed
there's...
his wife?
Exactly.
Is there anybody in the world
wanted to know all about
know how he did it?
Well, but the women are the ones that drove it. They wanted to know all about the head getting... Well, you can laugh.
What do you mean the women? That's what I'm having a hard time with. I can understand that the human race itself can be very macabre and obsessed with things, you know.
Oh, okay. The point that I'm trying to make here is that talk radio is dying because all anybody talks about is Obama. Now you come along with a friend that killed himself. And you won't go and tell anybody.
And I think you're a male. You sound
it.
Male
Ma'am,
anyway.
I'm going to say this.
You who's curious about what happened.
I already know.
You're trying
I already
to
know.
Say
do you know?
That it's women who are curious.
Wait a minute, David. David, don't say it.
No, this lady's curious. I already know. Do you want to know? Ma'am?
Don't say it.
Do you want to know how the guy died? Because I already know.
No, I don't.
Don't say it.
No, I
you're
don't.
Sure?
I respect Phil's right to privacy.
How about if I tell you off the air?
No, I don't. You know, you're just trying to prove a point.
It does. What does it matter? I didn't know that.
Because
the
you want to know. You want to know.
David.
I'm sorry that anybody has agonized to that point.
I'm asking Mr. Henry. I'm directing Mr. Henry now to tell you how his friend killed himself. Do it, Henry.
No, I won't.
No.
I'm telling you to do it.
I'm not doing
it. Up if anybody even suggests
it
that.
It doesn't matter, because when you hang up, you'll turn your radio up because you want to hear it.
Well, I won't do it. She can turn her radio up all she wants.
If I threaten, I'll fire you.
You go right ahead and fire me. You can't fire me anyway.
I'll sue you.
You can sue me. I won't say how my friend died. I will not do it. It doesn't matter what you do.
God! Why won't you do it?
Who hung up?
Because
I didn't hang up. I'm asking this guy why he won't do it.
Because I'm not that desperate. There's certain things I won't do. I ain't going to do it. I ain't telling anybody how he died. They know enough. He committed suicide. That's it.
Oh, would you please?
That's heartbreaking enough.
Please! What? You still on? What do you got her on the air for? She said no. She didn't want to know about it. She's got to turn the radio up. You know she's going to listen. You know and you won't say anything about it. Are you laughing at me? Now you're laughing at me.
Yes, you sound like a foaming idiot.
I want to tell you, you know something, lady? I'm working here. I don't know what you're doing. I'm working. I'm trying to get something going
well,
here.
I'm lucky enough that I don't have to work.
Okay, what husband died?
All right, that's enough. Thank you.
I'm just asking you how much your husband left you.
It was nice.
Thank you very much. Nice talking with you. Thank you.
Did your husband leave you? What did he? You're not even doing any fun. See, so there's a guy who died because she probably drove him. Talk about suicide. And
thank you very much, David. And thank you very much for threatening to tell everybody how my friend died.
I don't know how he died. I just thought that I would.
You don't know.
No. You ever said?
Yeah, I did. As a matter of fact, I said it as recently as the show on Friday.
And why would you say it now?
Because I don't like you coming on my program and telling me, okay? And what you said about that lady.
Oh, here, ladies and gentlemen, here's where Phil Henry becomes the benefactor of the whole human race.
Oh, what you said about that lady.
You know something. You know as well as I do. You don't care.
Yes, I do care, talking about her husband dying and leaving her all kinds of money.
I said he committed suicide. But I'll tell you this, but...
Why would you insult somebody who wants to defend me? See, that's the whole point. They wanted to defend my point of view. I won't say it, and we're done talking about Paul, okay?
You got it on your website, and you won't...
Yeah. Why are you crying?
Because we need...
The audience? Well, there you go.
So you're willing to cut your own throat? And in the...
Would you hang up on him when I give you this?
Yeah, it means cutting the throat.
That doesn't mean I'm willing to really cut my own throat, and you don't have to tell him. I mean, cut the phone call, bud. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for your concern, and we did hear from an awful lot of you off the air, and we had a very nice time, and no, I'm not coming on the air and talking about this, and we burned up a whole hour, and that's where that's at. And I hope you never have to go through it in your life. I really, truly hope you never get a phone call that says, you know, that happened to a friend of yours. We'll be back. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Are you missing your dog? Some people are using Skype. That's right. Vernon Dozier to join us in the next hour on Skype and the dogs, and Larry Grover on the local airport security after Al-Qaeda's underwear bomber number two is busted by the gendarmes. We'll be right back. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. There are times during our breaks, if you've got Phil TV in HD, that I swear I sound exactly like Buddy Rich in those tapes. Have you ever heard the Buddy Rich tapes? Oh, they're beautiful, man. The Buddy Rich tapes is, he was a great jazz drummer, and he's a hell of a musician, great musician, but he would berate his band. And one of the musicians in his band brought a tape recorder on board the bus one day and recorded Buddy Rich's rants against his band. All of the guys, he's talking to these guys, he's calling them high school dropouts. He says, you guys can't play time. He says, you guys suck. He says, I played with the number one musicians. You guys sound like a bunch of high school dropouts, is what he used to say, you know, screaming and yelling at him. And I was going off during the break about something, and I think I sounded just like Buddy Rich. 877, so if you can at all make money on the outtakes of Phil TV and HD, remember, I own all of it, so sorry. 877-876-PHIL, I'll make the money. And welcome back. Among U.S. adolescents, misuse of prescription painkillers peaks at age 16 earlier than thought, a new large survey analysis reveals. What our findings suggest is that if we wait until the last year of high school or college to take some kind of action that could prevent the misuse of these painkillers, it'll be a case of too little, too late, cautioned study co-author James Anthony, professor of epidemiology. Oh, I should know that word, epidemiology, and biostatistics in the Department of Epidemiology and Biostatistics, Michigan State University. In East Lansing. It's a question of education that we're going to bring on the line here. Both Vernon Dozier, who is a high school teacher, as well as Father James McQuarters, who also, Father McQuarters, as you know, is a priest there at Belmar Academy. Both of these men working very closely at Belmar Academy. Father McQuarters, how are you this evening?
Good evening, Phil.
And Vernon?
Hey, Phil.
And so we're talking here about the misuse of painkillers by teenagers. Not only misuse, we're talking about the abuse.
Right. The topic that I was going to talk about was the animal scapping.
Is that what I brought you on for?
That's what I thought, yeah.
And Father McQuarters?
No, I was going to speak on the painkillers, but I also... had spoken there. He said that you're talking about Skyping with the animals too, yes.
Well, is that what you were coming on for?
No, I'd be talking about the painkiller.
Okay. You're talking about adolescents taking too many painkillers.
That is right, yes.
I was brought on to talk about I had told you that I wanted to come on and talk about animal Skyping. And I, you know, right now we're just wrapping up a coach's dinner that Father McCorders is at here, and we're having our coffee. And so I've got all the time in the world. I'm not, you know, not leaving here anytime soon. So if you want to talk about kids taking painkillers, you know.
That was my topic, and I didn't know that that you'd be talking about something different.
And talk about kids on painkillers. I mean, my opinion about kids on painkillers is real simple. I mean, they're going to take pain. You're not going to stop kids from taking painkillers. And so the best thing to do is just, you know, if they're going to take them, they'll take them.
Right.
If they're going to take them, let them take them.
Well, I mean...
Here's my feeling, Phil, about young people that abuse these pills. I think that the young people are going to abuse the pills that are available to them. And if they die as a result of their drug abuse... then that is how it goes. I don't think the older I get, you see, the tougher it is to care about it, you know.
I understand.
And
what do you mean the older you get, the tougher it is to care about it?
I'm almost now, you know, Phil, I'm in my 70s now, and I get further and further away from the problems of youth. And so I said to myself, well, if they're going to take the pills and they're going to kill themselves, I can't bring myself to care that much. Since it really has nothing to do with me.
But you're a priest. You're a priest at Belmar Academy, which is a high school.
No, I'm a priest. I'm a priest at the Associated Parish, the Belmar Parish. So we have an awful lot of the elderly here as well. As well as young people in the school, you're right. But we've got younger priests to care about that.
So what you're saying is I should have brought a young priest on to talk about kids abusing pills.
It seems to stand to reason. I understand what the father's saying. He's old. And the older you get, the less you care about young people's problems, right?
That's exactly right, yes. For instance, there was a bond of some kind. I don't know if it's a bond or how they raise the taxes. And it came in the elections last year. And I found myself voting against it because they wanted to build schools. And I thought, well, I'm not going to be around. First of all, I don't have any children. But even if I had grandchildren and so forth, I'm not going to be around to care whether there's a school built or not. It's my money, you see.
So you don't have any care or concern for the younger generation that's coming up?
I care and I have concern, but it's not my primary care and concern. There's people with far more money and far more political clout than I do. I don't care one way or the other. It's interesting if they have a school built. But it's my money, you see. They'll take the money away from the parish to build another school. I'd much rather see them take the money and do something with the money that's going to benefit people of my age, you see.
But I understand what you mean about your age, but as a priest.
You keep doing the priest thing. He's a priest, but he's a priest for old people, right?
That's exactly correct. And so
you're a priest for old people.
Yes, I'm a priest for old people. That means that the problems of old people are the problems I care about, and they're the problems that I address. If a kid kills himself taking pills, there's nothing I can do about it. I'm tired of talking about it.
And you know what, Father? You don't know how lucky you are, because that's all I ever do at my level, you know.
You know, you two guys couldn't be less, more insensitive or less sensitive. I'm talking here about kids taking painkillers.
Well, look, at how many times do you want to talk about that? How many times do you want
to... You know, the kids are going to take pills, and they're going to kill themselves, and there's nothing you or me or anyone's going to do anything about it. Sure, I could go down there and tell him about it's a bad thing, but you waste all his time on the issues of the young, and meanwhile there's people like myself and other people in the parish of my age, and we're slowly rotting away, until one day they're going to find us dead for weeks, and I'm trying to cushion that fall a little bit.
Well, I don't know how we made the mistake then of having you two guys on here to talk about this problem. I couldn't have found two guys more insensitive about the problem. And
I thought I was coming on to talk about dogs, people Skyping their dogs.
I said what I wanted to say about the pills.
So that you were going to come on here and just talk about kids, whatever the hell, they're going to take pills, let them kill themselves.
Pretty much, yeah. And I know it shocks you, it shocks you.
I appreciate the candor, Father.
What do you got to say about Skype?
Come on, Phil, don't let, you know, you start to
be a big baby about it.
No, I'm asking. Okay, I'm asking Vernon. What do you got to say about Skype?
Well, don't get that attitude, okay? We came on air. We told you what we thought about 16-year-olds popping pills. What do you want us to do? Do you want us to turn this into some kind of a touchy-feely roundtable on the poor drug-addicted kids? God almighty, Henry. You and you, you know, when you did that whole thing for my friend's place.
I'm not talking about kids on pills, okay? We're all done with that. What about dogs being Skyped by their owners?
But I'm all done talking about it, and I don't know nothing about Skype. Don't you get lost, Father, okay?
What's that?
I said, why don't you get lost?
Father, thank you very much, okay?
I heard what the man's...
Just, I, you know, every time he hangs around, and he starts in with his moralizing. And...
Well, he sure wasn't moralizing there. He sure wasn't moralizing there. A lot of kids with their pills, oh, well, what the hell, you know.
Well, Phil, how many times do you want to talk about kids having drug problems, huh? How many times do you want to talk about kids having drug problems? I understand totally what the father's talking about. Kids and their drug problems, kids and their drug problems, kids and their drug problems. You know, either they're going to live or they're going to die. And I think the way we ought to look at it is the way they looked at youth in the Middle Ages. You know, if the kids survived past the age of 7, then you thought maybe, just maybe, you'd put some time and some sweat into raising that kid. But I think these days, we have to wait and see whether the kid makes it past 15, 16. Because you don't know whether that kid's going to blow his brains out, or he's going to drop too many pills, or...
And so up until then, we just sort of treat them as things, huh? Maybe that's what we're doing anyway. Maybe that's why they're on the pills.
Oh, yeah, sure. That's exactly right, Phil. If we just keep right on being... You know, we've done everything that we can. And
you're a teacher. This guy was a priest. You're a teacher.
Yeah. So what? I do everything I can to teach these kids what I can. Now you want me to get into their psyche and figure out... We haven't been able to figure this out for 40 years, Henry. 40 years, back when you were in high school, kids were dropping too many pills, smoking all kinds of that dope. No. I'm here to talk about people that Skype their dogs. I'm here to talk about dogs. That's something you can do something about. Dogs.
And what's your feeling about that?
Well, are you going to break for commercial?
You know something? Everybody around here is all of a sudden concerned about when I break for commercials. I'll break for a commercial. What do I need to break for? Okay, I got to break for a commercial.
That's what I thought.
Okay, well, hold on. We'll be right back, and we'll talk about dogs. We were going to talk about 16-year-old kids taking too many pills, but Father McCorders and Vernon Dozier, they've pretty much figured out there's no point in talking about it. They're going to take pills. What the hell? Let's talk about something we can do something about. Dogs. 877-876-7445, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Our number, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445.
You got a kid that you just told him he was a boring SOB.
I didn't say, I just said you're boring, man.
And he's still hanging on.
Yeah, he's hanging on. He's lonely. So let's talk.
Well, that's my whole point, though, you know, and I shouldn't say this, but these kids are taking pills, and there's nothing you can do about it. They're a pain in the, you know what. Phil, let me tell you, I'm a teacher. And I have been a teacher, and I love the kids, but they are as bothersome a bunch of people. They don't stop bothering you, and they don't stop, you know, with their problems. And
well, isn't that what kids are, full of problems?
Yeah, well, you're the guy that just said this one guy's a pain in the ass.
I'm a talk show host, man. I'm not a teacher. You know, here's the thing. I'm not going to be, you know, that's not my job. I don't give a damn how often people want to give me the job. I do not accept the job of parent, guardian, big brother, uncle, none of that. That's, people have those already. I'm a talk show host. I'm an entertainer, blah, blah, whatever you want to call me. I'm on the radio. I try to kill 3 hours of boredom every night for people. Sometimes I'm successful. Maybe sometimes I'm not. I don't give a damn one way or the other. This is what I do. So I'm not anybody's daddy.
Well, people don't see you that way.
Well, they better start seeing me that way. Because I'm not interested in people's problems. I'm not interested in solving anybody. The only guy's problem that I'm interested in is my own. Okay? I mean, I'm interested in the world's problems as it pertains to, you know, making society a better place. But I'm not going to sit here. I ain't running the Dr. Laura show here.
Oh, boy, I'll tell you something. You're on the radio right now, and you're basically telling everyone that you couldn't give a damn whether they live or die. And I'll tell you, I got to, you know.
That's not the case. I didn't say that at all. I'm just saying that I'm not their daddies. You understand?
Well, let me say something to you, Phil, along this line, because I know that we were on here. I was going to talk about the dogs.
Yeah, well, can we get to that, okay? We already figured out that 16-year-olds don't matter to you at all, and you don't give a damn if they all die. And
what are you saying?
I'm not saying I hope they all die. I'm just saying I'm not their daddy, okay? You're a teacher. Don't you think you ought to care?
I just got done telling you. Boy, I just got done telling you that I do care, and I've tried to care, and it doesn't matter if I care. Okay? Because I've tried over and over again to get through to these kids, and they're stupid.
All right, now look.
No, hold on. You wanted me to say it, I'm going to say it. They're stupid. These kids that take these pills, these kids that are killing themselves at 16 and 15 are stupid.
All right, now you're getting a little...
Oh, now I'm getting what? Now I'm not being accepted. You were just now saying you're not their daddy.
I'm telling you, you asked me why aren't I doing something about it. I'm a talk show host. That's the stupidest thing I ever heard in my life.
All right, now I'm telling you why I don't do something about it. Now you listen to me.
You're a teacher.
You just hold on for a minute and listen.
You're a teacher, though.
Would you please listen?
Are you not a teacher? Are you not a teacher?
Listen to me. Yes. The answer to your question is yes, I'm a teacher. And I'm a good one. In fact, I'm not only a good one, I'm a great one. But I can't do anything about a kid that's going to take a bunch of pills. And he's going to stick them down his throat. I can't do anything about that.
You can't.
No, I can't. What do you think I'm going to do? You think I'm Superman, huh? You think I'm Batman? You think somebody throws a big bat? What do you call that bat that they did? Remember the bat?
Batman, yeah.
No, the bat that the guy put up in the air.
The big bat spotlight?
Yes. Excuse me. I'm sorry, Phil.
Boy, you know something? You're so out of control tonight. You're screaming, you're yelling, you're belching.
Let's just stick to the point, okay?
You mind not belching?
I had a Diet Coke. Do you mind? Now, do you think someone's going to put a big bat signal up there and say, hey, help me? I can't do that. Now, I came on your program tonight to talk about something I can do something about, and that's dogs and people that Skype their dogs. Now, if you miss your dog and you Skype your dog, and you Skype your dog, that means you're calling up your dog. You're calling up your dog. I don't even have the words. Oh.
All right, I'm sorry that I brought up the whole kid thing. I mean, you know...
I dealt with it. Father McCorders was here with me.
We got Father McCorders back on the line. Father? Hold on, he's on line 4. Father McCorders is back on the line. Father, you're listening to this, right?
I am listening to it, Phil, and I want to say to Vernon that, you know, there's no point if you're getting... It sounds to me like you're going to have a stroke.
Father, you know, Henry wanted to keep on pressing the point home.
Bill, you hear what we're saying? That the 16-year-olds are going to pop the pills, they're going to take the painkillers, so on and so forth, and they're going to kill themselves. There's nothing we can do about it. And I'd rather do things about people that I can do things for, and those are the elderly.
So let the kids die.
Let the kids die, yes.
God!
As I said before, and Vernon made the point, they've been killing themselves for decades on pills. Now, I have been waiting patiently to hear about the dog and the Skype, and I don't even know what it is, but it sounds fascinating, and I've called up to ask the two of you, in the name of the Virgin, in the name of the Mother of God, I'm asking you to do the decent thing here and talk about the Skype and the dog and the owners and the stupid... And that, I don't want to hear any more about...
I apologize, Father. That's my problem. I let it I let it get away from me.
Well, would you please get the show under control?
I'm the host. I'll get it under control.
Then do something about it, do you? Hey, try and sit here. I'm standing here to hear about the Skype.
See what happened?
Not my fault. Not my fault at all. You guys were going
to
come on.
No, I told you I wanted to talk about the dogs and Skype, and you went on with the pills. Now, listen. I don't want to talk anymore about it. You understand?
I understand.
I don't want to talk anymore about it. Kids today, the teenagers today, are dead. They're dead to me. Yes, I'm a high school teacher, and yes, I got to go into my job every day, and I got to pretend like I care, but I'm telling you, between you and me, they are dead to me.
You are a sick man.
Oh, really? Am I a sick man, Mr. Hendry?
Yes, you're a sick man. You're a sick man to talk that way about a generation of young people. A generation of young people that you're in charge of. Okay, so you want to talk about the dogs? Vernon, do you want to talk about the dogs?
Yes, I want to talk about it. Are you all done lecturing me on what a sick animal I am?
No, I'm not. I think the kids are in trouble. This whole generation of kids are in trouble. And you're a private school teacher. Are you not a private school teacher?
No.
What a punk. All right, we'll be back with Vernon Dozier. You want to talk about the Skypes, huh?
What? It's called Skype. The dogs are plural. Skype is singular.
We're going to come back and talk about Skype with Vernon Dozier, who don't care about dead kids overdosing on pills. On the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, Mr. Hendry. Mr. Dozier's talking about kids in a bad way, and I think that we really ought to...
Shut up, you punk. Get him down.
Phil Hendry. Listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Why are you on the air?
I said that I wanted to come on. I wanted to speak with Vernon about the Skyping.
Father, this is Vernon Dozier. I had already I told Mr. Hendry what I was going to talk about.
No, I know, but I insert some of the things that I want to say.
You want to insert some things, huh?
Why don't you grow up?
All right, well, what are you guys going to do now? You going to argue?
I'm not arguing about anything. The father called up. He was going to be part of the pill-popping session, which both of us agreed is not worth our time or trouble.
Well, I wanted to talk about it. I don't even know why I'm keeping you on the air.
Well, the fact is you did keep him on the air.
Fact is you did keep me on the air because you want to hear me talk about Skype and dogs, you know.
But I wanted to come on and give my comment about the Skype of the dogs because
it's called Skype of the dogs. It's called Skype and your dog.
Well, what is that, sexual or something? Why don't you get with it?
Sexual? What kind of a priest?
You guys work together all day long, and you're coming on my show, and you can't get it. And you, Father McQuarters, ought to be ashamed of yourself for that reference, and why I even am continuing with this discussion.
Well, why are you continuing the discussion?
Maybe it's because you need us. You thought about that?
Well, I'll hang up on your asses right now.
Woo!
Yeah, look, that's not me. That's McQuarters.
Is that you, Father? Is that you, Father?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not doing it.
Boy, you guys are children, aren't you?
Look, all I'm saying here is that I came on for one reason.
Mm-hmm.
Father McQuarters, is that you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then I'll hang up on you, okay?
Why would you hang up on me? Because I'm telling the truth? Because I'm telling people, just as Vernon did, that you've got all kinds of bravado, and you've got all kinds of threats of people, but you got me on because you want to talk about these issues, because you don't know how to talk about them.
I can talk about them fine, and I ought to hang up on you, is what I said.
God, what a pain in the ass.
What did you call me?
You know something? Hang up on Father McQuarters. All right, you there, Vernon?
I'm here, yeah. I'm set to go. I thought he did. You
did you put him on hold?
Yeah.
I said to hang up on the guy. Don't put him on hold.
Look, I don't need this, Mr. Henry. I come on your program to comment on the story. And if you have Father McQuarters on for comic relief...
I don't bring a Catholic priest on, and I've never had him on for comic relief. And when I said to hang up on the father, that's what I meant, bud. Do you understand? Okay. Vernon Dozier joins us now as we talk about missing the dog. Say hello on Skype. This is interesting.
It really is, Phil. Is that that guy?
Is that you, Father? Bud?
I don't know.
You better figure it out, or I'm going to come over there, I'm going to beat you up, I don't care if there's dead air, and then I'm going to come back and finish the show.
That was me, I'm sorry. That was me.
All right, what am I doing here, man? Am I running a kindergarten, or am I doing a talk show? All right, missing the dog? Say hello to Skype. It's a feeling dog owners know all too well, the guilt brought on by the hurt look in your pet's eyes when you leave home, when you leave them at home alone.
All right, now here's what I wanted to comment on, Phil. Number one, when we anthropomorphize a dog, and what I mean by that is we give a dog human traits. We are not doing that animal a service. Dogs are not getting sad. They're not depressed. They simply don't know where their owner is. It might be good, it might be bad. It doesn't make any difference to them. They could care. And the thing about a dog, and this is what people don't understand, I've had a lot of dogs. I had Weimaraners. I had a collie when I was a young boy because the Lassie show was very popular.
What do you call it, the Lassie show? It's very popular.
Okay, bud.
I don't know how he got on.
Get him out of here.
You gonna kick his ass?
I may kick his ass later. You take over the phones.
I don't know how he got on there.
You're doing it on purpose, and you know.
Is that Dickman put him on, didn't he?
Yeah, Dickman and him, they think it's a big joke. Go ahead.
All right, so the Lassie show, it's hard for me to keep going because I've just been mocked. And I don't care if someone makes fun of me, but when someone makes fun of an animal that I loved...
Well, I don't think he was making fun of the...
Yeah, he was. He was saying laughing. I heard it. Hold on, I just got to pull myself together on that one. Oh, God. Oh, man.
All he said was he made fun of the notion of Lassie.
I understand that, but it just pissed me. In any event, Phil, I've had a lot of dogs. And dogs, I can tell you this, Phil, from experience. They call dogs man's best friend. No, dogs are not man's best friend. Dogs will be loyal to you as long as you feed them and you give them a big rawhide bone to chew on and you give them a bed to sleep in and you pet them. They're loyal up to that point. After that, they look out for themselves. And I don't know what people are talking. People know this is true. Dogs are among some of the most disloyal animals that I think the world has ever seen. I think dogs, in many ways, are the equal of men when it comes to their fickle nature and it's tough for me to say this, just the backstabbing. You know.
Well, how can a dog be a backstabbing? You know.
I understand that. It's not an intelligent thing, but it is the nature of a dog. They've gotten so much publicity, dogs have, about being good, friendly. They are the lyingest, most backstabbing, most disloyal creatures the world has ever seen, I think. And I know I speak from experience. Now, please give me that dignity for a moment. And
well, how does it...
Would you just let me finish, please?
I know, but can I just... How does it manifest?
All right, now I'm going to play the part of Father McQuarters. I'm sorry, forgive me, Phil, but...
How does it benefit?
That's exactly what you just did.
Okay, did you get your jollies there?
I'm not trying to get my jollies. I'm trying to illustrate to you how you're bothering me. Now, I said, and I'm going to repeat myself, dogs why dogs will stick it in your back when you're not looking? Dogs will sink one right into your back. If a dog had the ability to take a shiv, to work a shiv, to work a shank in a cell, all right, let's go whole hog on the fantasy. If dogs were sharing a cell with you, they would secrete or otherwise hide a shank, work it with the cement in the cell or some other kind of abrasive, and then when you...
Okay, I get your point. What a ridiculous... I get your point. You don't like dogs.
I didn't...
How could you say that when I didn't...
Well, do you like dogs or don't you?
I like dogs.
Well, then what are you talking about? A dog will stick a shank in your back.
I'm trying to make a point, Phil, that dogs are not that. Everybody will tell you, no matter who they are, their dog is just this. Like, dogs don't get sad. So when you turn on a Skype account for your dog, and you call a Skype account, and you see your dog, in this case, it was a couple, they got a little puppy, and they named the puppy Pizza. Okay, that's real cute. They live in Brooklyn. Great, fine, fantastic. Now they call up the Skype account, and there's the dog sitting there. And the dog looks sad to this guy. Well, no, dogs aren't sad. Dogs don't get sad. Dogs simply want to know, where's the food? Where's the ball? Where are the humans? That's all. The look on their face is not sadness. It's not happiness. It's simply, where is that activity that ordinarily I would be, I'd do?
Okay, but if they don't have the activity, do they miss it?
What do you mean, miss it? Are you saying, are they depressed?
No, what's going through the dog's mind?
What's going through the dog's mind is activity known as ball, food, human, not here. Must find other activity. Barring that, we'll go to default activity, which is sleep or defecate. One of the two. That's what dogs do. If there is no food, if there is no ball, if there is no human, if there is no cat to chase... Default activity is sleep or to eliminate, and in many ways that's the same as human beings. But that doesn't mean they're upset or sad. It means they go from one activity to another activity. Now, if any of the activities are there, such as ball, cat,
what do you mean by cat?
Chase a cat or something.
All right. So another animal.
Well, it depends. I mean, if it's another dog, then they play. But if it's a cat. The cat they're going to go after, just to say they did. Dogs in their own way have that kind of pecking order. And to be able to say, I took off after a cat today, and they're not going to say it.
So now you're attributing some kind of a human...
No, I'm not. I'm simply saying that when dogs bond, or when dogs when dogs get together at the end of the day...
That sounds to me... Like you're giving...
You're interrupting me again, Phil, so now I have to mock you. That's what you sounded like right there.
I'm sorry. I'm the host of the show. I'll interrupt you.
Interrupt me? You just missed it.
You know what? If you don't like the way I'm saying things or interrupting or anything, you can hang up right now. You can hang up right now.
I don't want to hang up.
Why?
Because I want to say what I want to say.
All right. Then just be quiet for a minute. You are giving dogs the very anthropomorphic features that you said we should not give them.
How am I doing that?
Well, you're saying when they fraternize at the end of the day...
Whatever dogs do at the end of a day... Not at the end of a day. I don't know how long a dog day goes. You see what I'm saying? At the end of a dog... There must be some cycle of activity that at the end of that cycle, dogs will gather...
And what?
And talk about what they did that day.
Talk about what they did that day. So that is...
Well, Mr. Henry, your condescension,
Well, that's exactly what you said dogs don't do. That's an anthropomorphic thing.
How?
Are you kidding? That's what humans do at the end of a work day, at the end of a human cycle...
Well, I could see your eyes widen when you... I bet you were all... Ooh. I said whatever a dog day is. Okay, we know that 1 year is equal to 7 in the dog...
Do Do dogs have some calendar?
No, of course they don't.
Then what, you know...
I'm just... Whatever a dog feels is a day.
Maybe it's a full, like, a human day.
No, it couldn't be a human day, because the point that I'm trying to make, Mr. Henry, that you're trying to get me off with my point, I think it's very interesting with the technique you're using.
It's not a technique. It's not a technique at all, Vernon. I'm just trying to get you to make some sense here. You know?
And you're laughing at me, and I've got students listening tonight, so I'm going to go into class tomorrow, and people are going to basically say, hey, Mr. Dozier, we heard Mr. Henry last night when he tied your arms to the shower faucet. Drop the soap.
Okay, and there you go again, feeling sorry for yourself. The point that I'm making here, Mr. Dozier, is that you have given these animals the very anthropomorphic characteristics that you said other humans give them and should not. So if you have a dog that gets you think is getting sad, is not being sad. And if you have a dog that you think is a deceptive, backstabbing bastard, that's what you said, you know.
No, but I didn't put it like that.
How did you put it then?
I said dogs are not man's best friend. Dogs can,
for the right price?
If you give a dog a better rawhide bone, or say if you give a dog a chew toy, or let's say you give a dog a chew, like a rawhide chew, that's better than what you, you know, than his other owner, which gave him maybe a fabric monkey. You know, have you ever seen a fabric monkey? Okay, Mr. Henry?
Yes.
Is that yes, you've seen one? Or
yes, I know what you mean. Like a chew toy?
No, but it's a fabric toy. It's like a fabric monkey. Have you ever seen a fabric monkey?
Yes, I've seen a fabric monkey.
Well, now I know you're lying.
Okay, buddy, what difference does it make?
All right, so if you give your dog a fabric monkey and the guy down the street gives him a rawhide chew, what do you think that dog's going to do? He's going to drop you like a bad habit. He's going to drop you like a bad... He's going to drop you like a bad smell.
God. Are you emotional?
Forget it.
All right, we'll be right back. See if we can't get Vernon back to, you know, see if we can't get him calmed down. We'll be right back here on the word... If the dog's going to drop you like a bad smell, man. We'll be right back. Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
I'm going to get Margaret Gray on the line here from Santa Monica, California tonight. Margaret, go ahead.
Oh, hi, Phil. I wanted to ask the gentleman you've got on, Vernon. Vernon, hi. Margaret?
Yes, ma'am.
What do you recommend? Have you ever watched The Dog Whisperer?
Have I ever watched The Dog Whisperer? I've watched The Dog Whisperer many times, yeah.
Do you recommend what he does? I've seen him strap the water bottles to the back of one of the dogs as a way of exercising the dog. And then he goes, I want to have a bottle of water. And he'll grab it and he'll say, come here, Pooch, Pooch, Poochie, or whatever he named the dog. And the dog goes back and he gets a bottle of water.
You're talking about the...
Dog Whisperer?
Who am I speaking with?
This is Phil, Margaret.
Yes, the Dog Whisperer.
And I'm here, too.
And you're Mr. Dozier, right? Yes. I was primarily talking to you, but Phil asked the question.
Right. First of all, I'm not the Dog Whisperer. You know that, right?
No, I know that, but I thought you did something similar.
No, I don't do anything similar to the Dog Whisperer.
No, he's on here talking about how dogs are, if I may say...
I can speak for myself, Mr. Henry. Thank you very much. I appreciate that, though. I was initially on, ma'am.
But you don't do what the Dog Whisperer does?
If I can finish... No, I don't, ma'am.
All right.
I came on the program because I wanted to talk about how some people are... people are getting phone calls from their dogs.
People are getting phone calls from their...
I'm sorry, not...
People are setting up Skype accounts.
Phil, I can do it, okay?
Oh, my God, you're kidding.
Hold on, let me finish.
People are putting up Skype accounts for what? For dogs?
Yeah.
you let me do what I'm doing? I'm the guest talking to a caller.
But she was confused.
I know she was confused.
Well, the question I have is, you don't do what the dog whisperer do, or does?
I don't do what he do. I don't. I'm not here to be a whisperer of anything. You know what? I'd love for the dog whisperer, if I could just tell you a little bit of a joke, which is kind of a half joke and a half true statement.
Yeah, could you get to the whole Skype thing, too?
Yes, ma'am, I will, but I want to... This is my little joke. I hope someday the dog whisperer becomes a cat whisperer. And the reason why I say that is, can you imagine trying to whisper to a cat?
I imagine it would just claw your face right off.
There, you said the magic word right there. You got that right. No cat is going to let you go, hey, let me just tell you about that.
Cats would not allow that.
Wait, hold on. The dog whisperer doesn't go, hey, let me tell you about it.
Why do they call him that?
Because he's a guy that knows about dogs.
Cats?
Dogs. The whole reason why they called him a dog whisperer is because there was a book out about the horse whisperer, and that was somebody, I don't know who the hell, a long time ago or currently or whatever.
No, I think it was fairly contemporaneous.
Okay, fine. And it was somebody that could talk to horses. And I think they actually literally would go to the split rail fence where the horse pasture was, and the horse would come over, and they'd sort of talk into the ear of the horse as if they were whispering to the horse. And they became very, well...
I bet you want to say the word conversant, don't you?
Yeah, they became conversant with horses.
Well, and that's impossible, and that's the whole point, I think, of what Vernon is saying, which I disagree with. That's why I wanted to know if you... But I guess you don't.
I don't what, ma'am?
You're not a dog whisperer.
No, for the 15th time, no, I'm not. No, I'm not.
Well, you sound hostile.
To be honest with you, I'd rather take a sip out of a toilet at Dodger Stadium than be a dog whisperer. Okay?
Yeah, but that cat whispering thing sounds like it's right up your alley.
No, that's not what he said.
That's not what I said. I said I hope that guy that is the dog whisperer becomes a cat whisperer, and a cat takes off on his face. That's what I said.
Well, all right, so I've got the wrong show.
Yeah, you've got the wrong show, everything. Goodbye.
What a pain in...
All right, now, what I was saying...
We're out of time.
Yeah, of course you're out of time. Let me just say, whoever that guy is that's the dog whisperer, go ahead and whisper into a cat's ear and see what the cat does. Cats won't put up with that. Cats won't stand for it. You can whisper all you want into a dog's ear because a dog doesn't mind being degraded. Even though they are backstabbing sons of... Well,
you know what? You could say that a dog is a son of a bitch because they are.
Okay, ding ding for you. Score one for Mr. Henry. Made a big, big point. Big man. Huh? You didn't help me at all this hour. You didn't do...
We'll be right back with our news and information hour. Thanks, folks.
And you cut me off. And you did...
Phil Vernon, Henry. I'm a cat.
Hey, Vernon, I'm a cat whisperer.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
All right, welcome back here on the world famous Phil Henry Show. I know we promised to give away some shot glasses tonight. It's going to have to take place tomorrow night. We just, you know, ran out of time. But we'll give away some shot glasses. Might do it on our pre-show. So if you have a backstage pass, join us at 9:15 Pacific. That's 12:15 Eastern Time. And we'll do a shot glass giveaway. We will definitely give some away on the show proper tomorrow night. But as I said, we ran out of time. I apologize.
Profusely.
But we will have some shot glasses for you. We have to do the shot glass giveaway, bud, because...
Summer's coming up.
Summer is coming up. And by the way, you owe me a debt of gratitude because I could have kicked your ass when you let Father McCorders on for the 15th time, and I didn't.
That's true, man. Well, okay.
Yeah. I told you that if you let him on the air one more time, I'd beat your ass. Instead, I just threw you out of the studio. Didn't I?
That's true. Well, okay. Thank you for not beating my ass.
You're welcome. All right. Would you believe this one? This is kind of an interesting thing. There's a peace index, man. Oh, by the way, our website is philhenryshow.com. So get over there, get a backstage pass, and find out what you're missing out on, man. You're missing out on all of those thousands of hours of archived material, downloadable material, bits, and video casts, and, of course, our live video cast each and every night of the show. PhilHenryShow.com. Want to stay safe? Head to Maine and avoid Louisiana as America's most violent states are revealed. Also, America's most peaceful states are revealed. Violence costs our economy at least $460 billion a year. There's so many ways we could save money in this country, but there are just, either you're up to the task or you're not. Violence, the problem of violence, which is essentially the problem of people. People are violent, and there's acceptable violence, and then there is unacceptable.
What do you mean acceptable?
I mean, like if you were defending your own life or something, you'd have to resort to violence sometimes to defend yourself or someone else. But I'm just saying, the kind of violence we're talking about here is the kind that runs afoul of our laws. And if we were able to do away with that, we would save ourselves $460 billion a year. Well, that's nice to think about and dream about, but you're going to have to come up with something to solve that problem. And we haven't done that yet. Now, we're getting close. As we talk about pharmacology and treating people for depression and so on and so forth. But the United States is more peaceful now than at any time over the past 20 years, according to this survey. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I mean, do you know? Or?
No, I'm asking you guys. Why do you think the United States is more peaceful now? And what we're talking about here is per capita kinds, when we're looking at these violent crimes, we're talking about a per capita ratio, meaning murders per so many numbers of people, rapes per so many, armed robbery and so on and so forth. Why do you think America is more peaceful now than ever before?
I don't know.
I'm just going to take a wild guess, and it is a wild guess. But I really do believe that we understand better today. We understand better what is at the root of some violent activity. But I also think it has to do with the improvement in forensic science.
Yeah, that's all I'm going to say. No, you weren't. You didn't know what you were going to say.
Well, hold on for a minute. Maybe he was thinking about it.
Yeah, well, then, okay, I was thinking about it, too.
So what? All right, good, bud. You got your brownie points for the night, okay?
What you say about his brownie points? Hey, man, all I said was that I was thinking about it.
So he was thinking about it. What a petty, what a baby.
Yeah, man, I said I was thinking about it. Shut up. I'm just trying to get in good.
Can you be quiet, man, before I shove this in your mouth and gag you?
Yeah, gag me.
Kick your ass. For real. Now, I think it's because, I'll give an example. Here's an example of what I mean. And this is not it's not very satisfying, but there is something to this DNA science. And the reason why I say that is I've noticed in recent years, police will make arrests in a murder case. And you look at the guy, you look at the guy's MO, you see sort of the person he is, and you realize what they've just done is they have arrested a potential serial killer. This guy probably would have gone off and killed 20 or 30 people had this been 20 or 30 years ago. But because we are now able to positively tie someone by way of this DNA evidence to a murder or a crime scene, we're able to identify these people, actually identify the real perpetrator through the use of DNA, and you get these people sooner. They busted a guy in New York, I don't know how long ago, it was a year, 2 years ago, man. He'd murdered his roommate. I mean, it was some guy that he'd met in a bar, went up to the guy's room in a hotel. I guess they had sex, and he wound up butchering this guy up like Jack the Ripper. And they nailed this guy. He could have been long gone and off killing 3, 4, 5, 6, 10 more people before the cops ever got a hold of him. And that was the way things went back in the day. So when we say that we're less violent or that we are more peaceful, let's be very clear. The human animal continues to be aberrant in some cases. We're just able to identify some of these people a lot better. So it says here, for those looking for peace, it may be wise to steer clear of Louisiana. When you look at this, there's a map here of the United States, and Louisiana is very clearly the most violent state. All right, why do they say Louisiana is the most violent state? Because Louisiana has a murder rate, which at 11.2 per 100,000 people is the highest among each of the 50 states. It has 11 murders per 100,000 people. That's a lot of murders. If you're talking about multiply, what's 11 times 10, bud?
111 or something?
It's about, let's call it, no, it's 110. 11 times 10 is 110. So, and the reason why I said that, that would be a million people. That is 110 murders. If you're looking, say, at the city of New Orleans, and I don't know how many murders New Orleans had in a year, but that sounds about right. And it's probably a hell of a lot higher than that.
Well, you know, that's not what they're saying, though.
No, I know that, but they're saying, they're breaking it down and telling you that's 11.2 murders per 100,000. But if you look at a city like New Orleans, which is somewhere in the neighborhood of Metro, probably 2 million people, but the city proper, that's probably the rate of the murder in the city. I don't know. I'm just, 24/7 Wall Street reported that the rankings were completed based on five categories: violent crime, amount of law enforcement, and the ability to obtain small arms. IEP, whatever that is, Steve Coletta told 24/7 Wall Street, in perfect states, there'd be no crime. Therefore, you'd have no need for police, nor would you lock anyone up. So what does that mean? So the crime and the number of cops?
Yeah, number of cops, whether to use their gun.
Well, Coletta said that because peace is not an exact science, the organization's findings are based on several factors. I don't think there's a single silver bullet which creates peace. I think it's a multidimensional and really complex. So that's so that on that basis, we've pulled out the correlations. Whatever. So Louisiana was the most violent state with all of these. The most peaceful state, Maine. And if you're looking at this chart, I can just tell you just a snapshot of the most peaceful states. Do you want to know what they are?
Yeah.
Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Minnesota, North Dakota, Washington State, and Utah. There.
So that's like way north.
Yes, way north.
Mostly, yeah, you could say it's mostly white people, too.
And, hey, oh boy, come on, bud.
Well, ain't it?
No, that's not necessarily true, okay? It's sparsely populated states, man.
Yeah, but they're white sparsely populated. Man, if you listen to what the man's saying, if that was just sparsely populated black people, be the same thing. I doubt it. They'd probably go and do an all-day drive just to kill a guy.
Hey, what is it with you, man? Are you just trying to get your ass kicked tonight? I've been really holding back here.
I'm holding back, too.
Jeez. If you want to look at these states, mostly white people, I'll tell you this much, bud. If you look at all of these states, these are very sparsely populated states. Okay? So if you're anywhere in the United States, any sparsely populated state might very well be a snapshot of America's demographics as in terms of race. So if you want, you could say, well, there's very few people relatively, and Washington State is the most populous of these states. Washington State has a large city, Seattle. And Minnesota, too, has Minneapolis. But these are states that don't have a very big population. And the populations of black and white people are here in the United States are probably reflective somewhat in these states. Minnesota, North Dakota, Washington.
What black people live in North Dakota? Are you nuts, man? A lot of black folks live in them states. Yeah, but not as many.
Whatever, man. Yeah, not as many. You're right. Not as many white people live there. So Utah and so on. Then in the next states that are, the second tier, if you will, of peaceful states, and I'm eyeballing this, and let me tell you something. This is Phil Hendry, my geographic ability in terms of identifying a state. I am the man here. I can tell you what these states are, and there's no title on any of them. But the next tier, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island, those are the remaining New England states. So you could say New England in general. But Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. Then Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Ohio, Indiana, Kentucky, Wisconsin, Iowa, South Dakota, Nebraska, Wyoming, Idaho, Montana, Oregon.
Man, that's pretty good.
You name all them states, there wasn't no name on them?
So what? I'm just telling you. Yeah, I did. I identified all of those states, even though there was no name on those states. I just looked at them, the geographic shape. But the point I'm making is those are the next. And you're right, bud. There's, you know, they're further north. These northern states, especially states like Idaho and Montana and Wyoming, are very lightly populated states. The more populous the state. Well, Pennsylvania, though. You know.
Yeah, that blows that one out of the water.
Yep.
A lot of black people there, too, man.
Oh.
Yeah, huh? What do you say to that, bud?
Well, you said it's on account of they're sparsely populated.
Yeah, that black folks in Pennsylvania, though.
A lot of black people in Ohio, Pennsylvania, Indiana. All right, so there you have it, the most peaceful states in America, and the least peaceful, well, Louisiana is all by itself at the bottom of the list. Texas, Arizona, Nevada, Florida, some states you just know, Florida, South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee, Arkansas, Missouri, Oklahoma. Those are the most, and then Louisiana, the most violent states in the U.S. of A. We'll be right back. And by the way, Alaska, you guys don't get off too easy. You're on the same level as California in terms of violence, which you probably already knew. World famous Phil Hendry show will be right back here on our News and Information Hour.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. This is the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Well, welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. It is our News and Information Hour, bud.
Yeah, you're going to do the one on a mice ball.
Go on, you can't say that, man.
All right, we'll do it. God, what a child. Testicles of yogurt-eating mice shown bigger, and researchers credit probiotics.
Yeah, so what, man?
Bitter, you've been eating a lot of yogurt.
Yeah, if I have, then that, you know, pretty much tells a story about you and me.
I can eat more yogurt, too.
Yeah, that's great, bud. Go out and eat some more yogurt. You are sounding like an idiot tonight, more so than ever before.
Well, it says if you eat more yogurt, you're going to get bigger ones.
So what, man? That's just the size of the tentacle.
What do you mean, tentacle?
Testicles. Would you guys shut up? Last summer, a team of researchers from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology set out to better understand the effects of yogurt on obesity. They were following up on the results of a long-term study from the Harvard School of Public Health that had suggested yogurt, more than any other food, helped to prevent age-related weight gain. Well, the MIT team, led by cancer biologist Susan Erdman and evolutionary geneticist Eric Alm, wanted to replicate the work in mice. The researchers took a group of 40 males and 40 females and either fed the animals a high-fat, low-fiber, low-nutrient diet meant to mimic junk food, or fed them standard mouse meals. They then supplemented half of each diet group with vanilla-flavored yogurt. Their goal was to understand how a probiotic diet affects rates of obesity.
What probiotic?
Probiotic means that there is bacteria in the diet. Now, before you get grossed out, bud, in our intestines, in our digestive tract, is I shouldn't call it bacteria, but it is fauna, if you will, living organisms that help us digest and help us process our food.
What are you talking about?
I just got done telling you. I ain't going to explain it. When you take an antibiotic, what is an antibiotic doing? It is killing off these organisms, especially organisms that are infecting the body. If we take an antibiotic against any kind of an infection, we're killing the bacteria, the living organism that is making us sick. Antibiotic. If we take a probiotic, that means it is something that further fosters these organisms. And these are good ones. So the human body has good and bad. The bad ones, we want to kill off. But what happens with a lot of antibiotics, they kill all the bad ones, and they also kill all the good organisms and fauna in our system.
What do you mean by fauna, man?
Yeah, what, is that like flora and fauna?
Yes, it's like flora and fauna.
What, so who's she?
I'm going to belt you.
Hey, hey, hey.
Kick your ass, man, next time you ask that.
I don't know. Who's she?
You're an idiot. You're gonna make, I'm gonna pull a Christian Bale on you, man. Remember when he was gonna kick that guy's ass?
That was bitching.
Uh-huh. Well, we'll see how bitching it is. All right. So anyway, this is called a probiotic diet. Their goal is to understand how a probiotic diet affects rates of obesity and its related complications, including cancer. But the most entertaining aspect of all of this were things we didn't anticipate, said Ms. or Dr. or whatever, biologist Erdman. First, the scientists noticed that the yogurt-eating mice were incredibly shiny. Using both traditional histology techniques and cosmetic rating scales, the researchers showed that these animals had 10 times the active follicle density of other mice, resulting in luxuriantly silky fur. Then the researchers spotted something particular about the males. They projected their testes outward, which endowed them with a certain mouse swagger, Erdman says. On measuring the males, they found that the testicles of the yogurt consumers were about 5% heavier than those of mice fed typical diets alone, and around 15% heavier than those of junk-eating males. How about that, huh?
Looks like we're going to get some more yogurt.
You don't know that if it's the same in human beings. You don't, man.
Yeah, but every time something happens to a mouse, pretty much the same of a person.
No, it ain't. You talking about maybe cancer research and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, does a mouse look like you? Does a mouse look like a human?
Uh-oh.
Okay. Then why would you think that whatever happens to a mouse is going to happen to a human being? What, maybe we're going to get bigger ears, too. You thought about that?
Grow a tail. Maybe Robert will grow a tail. But I'm going to kick his ass.
I'm not going to hold him back this time.
Ow, that hurts.
Oh, shut up, man.
Ow.
Shut up, man. I'll really hit you.
Ow.
Ow.
Yeah, he said he was going to hit you.
That hurt.
I told you.
Next time you crack wise about a guy having a tail, bud, make sure you know who it is you're talking to.
That hurt!
Good, I'm glad it hurt. All right. Let him, he's fine.
I'll probably go see how he is.
No, don't go see how he is, baby.
Dude, he hit me, he almost hit me between the legs.
I wish he had.
That's weird.
Shut up, man.
God. All right, so they got bigger testicles. More important, the masculinity pays off. In mating experiments, yogurt-eating males inseminated their partners faster and produced more offspring than control mice. Conversely, females that ate the yogurt diets gave birth to larger litters and weaned those pups with greater success. Reflecting on their unpublished results, Erdman and Alm think that the probiotic microbes in the yogurt help to make the animals leaner and healthier, which indirectly improves sexual machismo. All right, so can you dig that? The findings could have implications for human fertility and ongoing work. Oh, we got to take a break. We'll be right back.
Just really getting to the good part.
Yeah, well, just eat more yogurt. You'll be fine. I think. Phil Hendry Show. And as I was saying to the guys here during the break, I don't know why I gotta know these things about people, let alone a celebrity. I don't know why we have to, but we do have to report them, you know.
You don't have to.
I know that I don't have to, but yes, I do have to. Because if I don't report this, somebody else will.
Yeah, you gotta take the high road.
Yeah, take the high road. What's that song?
You take the high road, I'll take a low road.
Yeah, you take a high road, I'm gonna take a low road.
That's nice.
What?
That's great. So you take the high road, I'm gonna take a low road. So what about it?
You never heard the song?
Yeah, I've heard the song.
Well,
see, when you guys start talking and then you don't know where you're going with it and you're waiting for me.
You're waiting me?
You're waiting for me to bail you out.
Well, what about you take the high road?
I think what you guys are saying is, why don't I take the high moral road and not report these stories? Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Here's why I don't take the high moral road and not to report these stories. It doesn't do you any good. It's not going to win me any friends. It's not going to win me any plaudits. No one's going to kiss my ass. No one's going to pay me more money. No one is going to love me more. They're going to say, gee, there was a story about John Travolta on another radio station. I think I'll go listen to that. Okay?
Well, I mean, you don't want to talk about it.
No, I didn't say I didn't want to talk about it. I said, well, I wonder, it's so funny why we have to know these things about people. This is very interesting, let alone a celebrity. But here it is. According to a lawsuit, now this is a John Travolta, it's a lawsuit filed by a masseur.
What's that?
Somebody that gives you a massage, okay? I don't know what a masseuse is. Maybe a masseuse is a female version of masseur. John Travolta has been sued by a masseur who claims the actor tried to have sex with him during a session. Now, listen very carefully to some of the details, and you might find some interesting aspects to this. According to the lawsuit, Travolta saw the masseur's ad online and scheduled an appointment for $200 an hour. The masseur did not know it was Travolta when the appointment was booked, but followed instructions and met up with a black Lexus SUV, which Travolta was driving. According to the suit, Travolta and the masseur, who says he saw Trojan condoms in the center console, drove to the Beverly Hills Hotel and went to Travolta's bungalow. The suit claims Travolta stripped naked, appearing semi-erect. The masseur...
What's that mean?
Oh, shut up. The masseur says he told Travolta to lay down on the table, and the first hour went without incident. All right, now, let me ask you something right off the bat.
What?
Travolta strips nude and appears semi-erect. Did this guy have a problem with that?
I guess not.
Well, okay, so I didn't know that this involved sex, but, you know, I guess it did. When have you ever had a... I mean, I'll tell you right now, if you have a massage, it is not de rigueur to strip naked. You know, you usually leave a towel on or something. So anyway, but this cat's okay with that. This masseur is fine. Yeah, there's John Travolta. He's nude, and he also looks like he's, you know...
Chubbing it up.
Yeah, take it easy, will you, bud?
Can't say that.
All right. The masseur says he told Travolta to lay on the table. The first hour went without incident, other than the fact that the guy's nude. Then, according to legal documents, Travolta began rubbing the masseur's leg, touched his scrotum and the shaft of his penis. How do you do that unless the guy's nude himself?
Maybe he put his hand in the guy's pants.
Yeah, maybe. And maybe the guy was nude, too. I'm going to just assume that he was. The masseur claims he told Travolta... By the way, this story is filled with a lot of graphic information that it would not be filled with were these two women. Why is that? In other words, if I was reading a story about a woman hitting on another woman, I'm not going to be hearing about the shaft of anything or the this or the that or any other specific anatomical information, am I?
Yeah, well, that's rude, man. You can't say that about ladies.
Uh-huh. Anyway, the masseur claims he told Travolta he did not have sex with his clients, but Travolta was undeterred, offering to do a reverse massage, adding, "Come on, dude, I'll blank you blank." I ain't gonna say it. The suit goes on to allege Travolta then blankety blanked and told the masseur he got to where he was due to sexual favors he had performed when he was in his Welcome Back Carter days. Adding, Hollywood is controlled by homosexual Jewish men who expect favors in return for sexual activity. Now, this guy is sitting there looking at John Travolta nude. John Travolta touched this guy's you-know-what. How? I think the guy was naked himself. Maybe not. But now John Travolta proceeds to self-pleasure, and this dude's watching all of this and having a conversation with him. But, you know, you got to be kidding me. The guy's going to turn around and sue this guy for what? And the fact that he said that Hollywood was controlled by homosexual Jewish men who expect favors in return for sexual activity, maybe he said it, maybe he didn't, maybe he was kidding, maybe he wasn't. But this guy that's filing the lawsuit sounds like a real, I mean, you know, I would not exactly trust this guy parking my car. The masseur, who is only listed as John Doe, don't you love it, man? Claims that Travolta called him a loser, but then doubled the hourly rate and sent him on his way. The suit seeks $2 million plus punitive damages. Travolta's reps could not be reached for comment.
What, you don't believe it?
No, I don't believe it. There's too much stuff going on here. What's this guy? He's suing because Travolta put his hands on him, but the guy's nude. Travolta's nude. The guy's giving Travolta a massage when Travolta strips naked and gets on the table. Then Travolta masturbates in front of this guy. And then Travolta's talking this, talking that, and talking a whole bunch of other stuff. Now, what's this guy doing in the room? If this cat has acted inappropriately, wouldn't you say to the guy, if nothing else, okay, pal, end of story, goodbye, see you later, all done. And by the way, you know what? I'm a masseuse, and that doesn't necessarily mean you strip naked. And like that. And you touched me, so get out of here.
Yeah, but you can't say that just because of that. The guy's lying. Maybe he's telling, maybe he was in shock.
Yeah, maybe he was so shocked about what Travolta was doing, he was like caught like a deer on a headlight.
He was a deer on a headlight, huh? You mean deer caught in the headlights?
Yeah.
Sure, man, that's what it was. The guy was just, oh my goodness, John Travolta's naked. He's also semi-erect, and I'll go ahead and give him a massage, but I'm still in shock. And, oh yeah, by the way, I took my pants off, and he just touched me, and I'm still in shock. But I'll go ahead and watch him while he masturbates. And let's see, what else? Oh yeah, the guy mentioned a whole bunch of stuff about Hollywood Jews. Welcome back, Cotter. And I'm just shocked. I'm shocked all the way to getting my rate doubled, which he accepted the money, and on his way he goes. You know, I'm going to tell you right now, I don't believe it, but then that's just me, man.
You're sticking up for a movie star.
No, man, I ain't sticking up for a movie star. I'm tired of being treated like I'm stupid by these people, that's all. I'm tired of being treated like I'm stupid. And the same thing goes for the average person out there. Listen to these stories. You are considered to be an idiot when a TMZ or whoever reports this, you're expected to automatically assume that John Travolta is a douchebag. You know, you're expected to automatically get shocked and upset and pissed off that John Travolta is a Scientologist. Yeah, he may be a Scientologist, whatever, you know. But if you listen to a little bit of the facts of that story, you realize it's very likely that this is just some scumbag looking for a payday, that's all. Travolta may be a weird ass. I don't know, and I don't care. But does that mean, you know, people get to be lied about? I don't know.
Probably he's eating a lot of yogurt.
Yeah, that's it. He was eating yogurt. His testicle got in the way.
The one testicle.
Yeah, that's it. He was eating a lot of yogurt, and his testicles got in the way. Who? The masseuse?
Yeah, whoever the guy was that got touched.
Maybe it was sticking out or something like them mice.
Like them mice. All right, and the CIA has thwarted a new Al-Qaeda underwear bomb plot, and they were being kind of sarcastic with this. I think that, you know, let's give them kudos. They thwarted an underwear bomb plot. The CIA thwarted a plot by Al-Qaeda's affiliate in Yemen to destroy a U.S.-bound airliner using a bomb with a new design, a U.S. counterterrorism official tells CBS News. Officials, however, deny there was ever any immediate threat to the public. U.S. officials told CBS News the plot involved an upgrade of the underwear bomb that failed to detonate aboard a jetliner over Detroit on Christmas 2009. Now I know why it was that I was completely not, I wasn't really aware of the Detroit bomb, and I know the story, but I was just completely out of it, because that's when I had pneumonia. Every news story that happened during that particular period, I was a complete in a fog over, man. But this was Christmas of 2009 when they thwarted that one. The new bomb was also built to be used in a passenger's underwear, but contained a more refined detonation system, so it wouldn't be triggered by a fart, you know?
Really?
No, not really. I don't know.
What an idiot, man.
Well, you figure it could be triggered by that.
Sure. And if that were the case, you know, then I wouldn't call it a very safe bomb. Of course, what bomb is supposed to be safe? Anyway, the device recovered has the hallmarks of a previous device used by Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. That's Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. That's the name of the organization, like the NBA or the NHL or...
Girl Scouts?
Girl Scouts. Including it was made by the same explosive, or made of the same explosive material, PETN. The bomb was designed to avoid detection at metal detectors. A law enforcement source told CBS News that indications are that it would not have been picked up under normal X-ray machines, but possibly body scanning machines, which would have warranted a more intrusive search, but it could be dependent on an alert. In any event, the body scanning machine would have picked it up, but then an alert TSA agent would have had to have gone in and done a more thorough search, and that is the big X factor, according to this. So, still in all, they may not have picked it up. So, thank you, CIA. You did a great job. We'll be right back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show with more in our news and information hour. See what other weird stories, man. I don't want to talk anymore about dogs Skyping their owners. And we already got the underwear bomb plot. Oh, more on the John Edwards case. Witness says he took Riel Hunter to an airport in the dead of night. We'll talk about that when we come back in the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Summer is upon us, in a couple of months, and it doesn't mean that you'll have any less use for your Ted's of Beverly Hills hoodie. As a matter of fact, if you are a coastline dweller, like some of us are, you go out to the beach at night, it gets pretty, you know, chilly, so you need your Ted's of Beverly Hills hoodie when you're out, even around a bonfire at night on the beach. And of course, if you live in near the mountains, or you're living near the off-roading trails, or whatever it is you're doing, it can get chilly at night, even in the summer months, no matter where you are, even in Florida. So get your Ted's of Beverly Hills hoodie. It's a great thing to have for those nights when you're doing the marshmallows or something, or you're outside at night and you still want to kind of stay warm, you know.
Yeah, I thought it gets butt cold on the beach.
It gets really cold on the beach, even in the summertime. And it doesn't matter where you are. You could be in Hawaii, you could be in Florida, you can be, you know, anywhere in the really warm southern states, man, at night, it's going to get chilly. So pick up your Ted's of Beverly Hills hoodie. All right. Riel Hunter, man. I don't know about anybody else, man. I think this John Edwards thing is the most interesting thing in the history of the world, man.
It makes one of you.
Well, that's fine, man. You know what? I just think it is.
Yeah, but why, man? You like seeing people suffer.
No, I don't like seeing people suffer. I think the John Edwards story is one of the most classic tales of a once great man being brought low. And there's a lesson in it for everybody. Look at a family, how a family can come apart. How a marriage can come apart. How a man's career can come apart. A guy who is still relatively vital, he's still in his youth, he was in his 50s. Running for president? Now this guy won't be able to run for anything, man. And the humiliation. John Edwards, you know, as soon as this thing hit the tabloids, was on his way to, I believe it was, he was on his way to Haiti to deal with the earthquake. And he wanted the blessings, the public blessing of the White House. He wanted President Obama to acknowledge his visit to Haiti. He wanted to get some kind of semi-official status as an ambassador of sorts from the United States, and he wanted the blessings of President Obama. Obama wouldn't even return his phone call.
Yeah, but Edwards is an idiot for doing it in the first place.
I agree. Edwards, well, and there you go. How Edwards could even consider asking for Obama's blessing after that. And I think there's something in it for everyone. I think it's a fascinating story. It was some of the most damaging testimony to date in the campaign finance corruption trial of former Senator John Edwards. The day began with the jury hearing jaw-dropping testimony about Edwards' most prolific contributor, a 101-year-old Rachel Bunny Mellon, and ended with another former supporter declaring that the more he learned about the senator's scandal, the more he was openly rooting against Mr. Edwards. The day's first witness, attorney Alexander Darrow Forger. That's a great name.
But it's Forger. That's even worse.
Yeah, we'll call him Forger. Had to admit that when you added up all his billionaire clients' donations to John Edwards and Edwards' nonprofit groups, the total was over $7 million. $7,109,600, to be precise. The money was given by Bunny Mellon between January 2006 and December 2007. The elderly Forger, who explained he's been practicing white glove law in New York for more than 60 years, whatever that is.
What is that?
I don't know. White glove law. I mean, maybe that's you just handle billionaires or something, you know.
Well, you don't wear white glove?
No, you're not wearing white gloves.
Like Mickey Mouse.
No, you ain't with Mickey Mouse. I don't think so. No, it's real refined clients. Very high-rolling class. This lady, the Mellon money, goes back over 100 years in America, okay? So this is some old American money.
That's an old American.
Yes, she's an old American. All right. Who explained he's been practicing white glove law in New York for more than 60 years, is a statuesque and a distinguished man with a commanding baritone and decidedly upper-class diction. He insisted to the jury that the widow of billionaire Paul Mellon did not donate all that money solely to ensure Edwards was elected president. Rather, he said she gave it because she took a liking to Senator Edwards. They shared an interest in similar issues like combating poverty, and she had a loyalty to her friends. Said prosecutor Robert Higdon, referring to the sum that went to two outside campaign entities set up to promote his campaign for president, "Did you know her to ever give $6.3 million to another friend?" "No," Forger answered, "but she's given substantial amounts to others. This is not the first time."
Yeah, how do you think he was talking?
No, she's, I don't know, one of those really snobby New England voices. At the morning break, a smiling John Edwards turned away from the defense table and whispered to his daughter Kate, sitting behind him, "It's a good morning for the home team." Whatever, man. But Tony Willis, age 50, the head librarian at the famous Mellon Library in Upperville, Virginia, but here's a great name, contradicted Forger's testimony. He told the court he interacted with Ms. Mellon nearly every day and that she was all about getting John Edwards to the White House. "She just thought he was the pick to be the next president of the United States," Willis said with a smile. "She was going to pay for whatever he needed." Why, she even wanted to pay for...
Don't say it.
Right. Willis said he filed away a letter Edwards sent to Mrs. Mellon just 2 weeks after that very first meeting at her spectacular Oak Springs Farm property in December 2005. "Dear Bunny, I can't tell you how much enjoyed the night we spent together." Don't grab it. I'm kidding, okay?
You're kidding?
Yes, don't grab it. I was about to say I was kidding. I'm just kidding around. The senator wrote thanking her for her hospitality, okay?
She spent the night with her?
I was kidding! The senator wrote thanking her for her hospitality, then asked for two separate $500,000 donations for his Center for Promise and Opportunity and his College for Everyone organizations. What is this guy kidding?
Man, that guy, he's got all kinds of money. Is that what they call about, like, laundering money?
Maybe, yeah, you could be laundering money that way, you bet. Wow, the jury was allowed to read that letter, but was not allowed to hear testimony about Edwards' attempt to get $3 million more from his benefactor. Oh, boy, you hit the jackpot there with Bunny Mellon there, Senator. All right, we'll be back. I'm sure there'll be more to come. Read up on it, follow up on it, whatever. World-famous Phil Hendry Show, produced by Dan Northcraft and me, Phil Hendry. Join us online at philhendryshow.com. As you shoot for that backstage pass, you get a backstage pass. You have access, of course, to all of our online archives as well as our nightly Phil TV video cast. Until tonight, guys, as we start another week, let that be a lesson to you.
And you.
Phil Hendry.